be myself. That's how I go about everything. And enjoy. I said in a bunch of interviews that I'm going to be and be a part of the community, be out there, enjoy, let everybody see you. Just another human. And like I said, so just being out there, enjoying, being myself, and being a part of, like I said, the community, being out there and supporting them.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Indeed it is. Welcome back to Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. That was Caleb Williams, Man About Town, Caleb Chicago, next on WTTW, right? Well, it's been well documented, right? Packers suck, Green Bay sucks, whatever it is. And he goes to Wrigley a couple times. He needs to take Tory Taylor to Wrigley. Take Tory Taylor to Wrigley, and Tory Taylor can throw out the first punt. Just kick it over the scoreboard. A texter got mad at me when I said, Waveland, Sheffield, and Kenmore, like, let it roll down Kenmore. Well, if he doesn't catch it square, it might roll off to the right. It might roll down Kenmore. We'll take anything that sails over the scoreboard at Wrigley. So it sounds like a stunt, but when you have a bionic leg, you need to show that off. Let's get an expert's opinion on that. Going to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois, Hub Arkish, NFL senior analyst for The Score. And my idea ties your two teams together, the Bears and the Cubs. And I want Tory Taylor to go to center field and throw out the first pitch the way a punter can and kick the ball over the scoreboard. What do you think?
Well, I think if he can do it, that's okay. it'd be great to have somebody like that, but it'll be interesting to see how much this kid can mean to the football team. He's been impressive in practice, I'll tell you. He does things that I haven't seen a lot of punter do. But I don't know about doing it for another team or another sport.
Yeah, kick it over. Come on. What does he do? You've seen in practice early, and that's, I guess that's the only real part of football, really, is it, or whatever they call football. It's the most football-like thing, is a punter kicking the ball. And what has he done? What sets him apart from what you've seen before?
Well, it's just, where he puts the ball, how high he kicks it, and, how he lands it. It seems like he lands every kick within 2 yards of the goal line. It's very impressive. But I think most of the media were sitting there watching him, asking the questions and talking about is, how is he doing that? How is it so different from what, so many punters have done for so long? And I think that everybody's still trying to figure it out. But I can tell you that when you watch him kick the ball, it is impressive.
He's not likely to get taped to the goalpost the way Todd Sauerbrunn did, right?
I haven't heard anything about him being, an unpopular candidate or anything like that. He seems to be fitting in just like all the rookies. And it's going to be very interesting to watch. Taking a punter in the fourth round is a big deal. And most of the experts think it made sense. Everybody felt he was going to get drafted. There was no question about that. Most punters are signed as free agents. The fourth round, that's impressive. And you look at his record at Iowa and then you understand, why he's a fourth round draft choice. And again, Steve, I wish I could tell you what it is that he's doing is different. I'm sure a lot of NFL GMs wish they could figure it out, too. But he is impressive kicking the ball, I can tell you that.
Talking with Hub Arkish right here on The Score, senior NFL analyst for this very radio station on which Saturday Suckage airs on, coincidentally, Saturday. So the practices with veterans and with rookies that Caleb Williams went through, and again, him at the mic, the things he says sound authentic and the right kind of things of, I'll make mistakes. I'm getting ready to learn. I'm in favor of him making mistakes. He's the one who volunteered. I want to make them once and fix it at that point and only make the same mistake once. Players and coaches know. They know what's expected on each play. We don't. We players and coaches know, and they know what should have been corrected, what could have been corrected. Do you have a sense of where he, for what he says publicly is the right stuff, but what may be the feeling among veteran players and coaches about how coachable, adaptable, and teachable he is?
You know, they all seem to be impressed by him so far, but they've also all known him for maybe a month, you know, the longest, and they have a lot more to get to know. But everything that we've heard both from him and from his teammates is that it does seem to be a good fit so far. You know, watching him, again, this is early in practice. I think that, you know, that was silliness of people reporting that he didn't do well on the first day or that he didn't pass well. You know, they're learning the plays, they're learning each other, and it just takes some time. This is more about getting to know each other and getting to understand the communication with them, and then just for the players watching each other and seeing what they can do. And every teammate who's commented on him has had, you know, nothing but positive things to say. And watching them, you know, and sometimes it's not even listening to them. You get asked the questions, it's watching the practice, it's seeing how they communicate and play with each other. And it just seems to be a very comfortable fit so far, a very good early start. He hasn't defended anybody with, you know, being too aggressive or too much of a leader as a rookie. And so, you know, good start. But we got to get to week four, week five of the season, see him play 3, 4, 5 regular season games, see what it looks like then, and then we'll have a much better feel for it. But he definitely is doing a good job of getting started, fitting in with his teammates, fitting into the budget. And, you know, so far I haven't seen or heard anything that isn't positive.
I know that the one issue that has come up is the cadence. I'm all for every issue coming up, all the mistakes being made so they can be fixed. And I don't want to wait till game 4 or 5 of the season, Hub. So you need to work on that. But the idea of the cadence, as somebody like you who has been focusing on who's going to hike the ball, and you wondered where the battle for center was going to go. I don't know if that has any effect on it, but the cadence idea, getting used to what he says, how he says it, what's going on, why is that an issue with him?
Well, again, because it's so early, I don't know that it is an issue with him. It's something you're concerned about every quarterback. It's something that his teammates have to get comfortable with and get used to. And again, they've had 3 practices so far, you know, and they haven't done much of those 3 practices. They haven't had any contact. They haven't, you know, hit each other. They haven't put pads on yet. But it is important, you know, because it gives them a head start on the defense, you know, and if everybody's comfortable in it and they're running the plays correctly all the time and getting it right and getting the timing down, you know, that's what makes a successful offense. So obviously it is very important. And, you know, that's something that I think that Ryan Poles knew before he decided to use the number 1 pick overall on him. You know, they've watched that in college and they've seen how that works and, you know, that he hasn't had any issues with it. But this is all part of the getting to know each other. You know, it's doing these things together, and it takes more than 3 practices to really know if that's, you know, if that's ready yet or not.
So they don't really play football because they don't get to practice football because the lack of CBA limits the amount of contact and things like that. But one of the things I think his college career told you is ball security can be an issue and fumbling. And we saw that with Justin Fields. Ball security was an issue. I don't know. I would hope that they would go about it. I would hope that they would go about making sure that he, I don't know, that he got stripped, emphasizing the defense is taking that away, going after that, not trying, because they can't really tackle him, but teaching him that. And I don't know if they can, if there are enough contact practices to do that. Are there?
Well, not right now, no. But when you get to training camp, you know, when training camp starts, they can do everything on day one. You know, there's no rule that stops them from having contact, or it's how head coaches and how teams are handling it these days, because there is more concern about, I don't know if there's more concern. Well, yeah, I think there is. There's more concern about injuries. You know, they're paying them so much money. And I don't think it's, you know, teams being cheap or worrying about their own money so much as it just, you know, when you're paying a guy, let's say $20,000 a year to do his job, and he gets hurt on day 3 and he's out for the rest of the season, that's a big loss, you know? And so you know, there's so much that they're trying to get used to. But this idea of ball security, you know, they will teach the quarterback, the young quarterback, they will teach him certain things to be prepared for. They will teach him things to, you know, focus on. They will be constantly telling him, you know, make sure you protect the football. But until they have seen him try and do it at full speed, they don't really know it's an issue yet. So they're not sure yet what it is they're trying to correct. That's all part of the timing with these kids of getting to know them and seeing them at this level and seeing if it is a problem. I know that, you know, I don't know that it was a major concern in college, but it was something that some of the scouts talked about, and it's something that they'll be watching carefully and trying to work on.
Talking with Hub Arkish, senior NFL analyst for The Score, doing that right here on this very radio station, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Talked about Steve Stone's contract's up with the White Sox, and I thought, well, if he leaves, then there's no reason to have announcers at all. And there was, I remember an NFL game, and texters made it right. 1980, Jets, Dolphins, neither were good. It was called the Silent Game. Do you remember that? Do you remember watching that? Do you remember anything coming out of that?
I don't really, to be honest with you, Steve. It's an interesting thought, but no, you know, I think it would be hard to watch a game without announcers, to listen to a, well, you can listen to a game without announcers if you're watching it, but you know, I really don't remember that, no.
Okay. I just thought, I knew that it was silent, and now with the way the chyrons work, that all the different places you can drop in information, and that game had Brian Gumbel coming in occasionally to reassure people that there wasn't, there TV set wasn't broken. You had game sounds of the game. We are doing a silent game here on NBC. Thank you for joining. And that's the way it went. But I don't know if there's a, you know, teams that are looking to save money would, that could be appealing to them. And you just pay a chyron operator to write the game, the down and distance. And it certainly would take away, you wouldn't need sideline reporters anymore. And I know you don't want to hear me say that, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying, as the fact that it happened in the NFL, I want to know if you had any recollection of that.
Yeah, no, I don't remember, and I don't know what people would enjoy about that. You know, I mean, the announcers don't bother me. I mean, I like agreeing and disagreeing with them. I like learning more about what's happened. They're getting information from the field that they're providing for us. You know, that I can tell you as a sideline reporter that I do, you know, during the course of the game, get to talk to the occasional player or coach. You know, you can't do it all the time. You're kind of interfering in their game. And it depends on the team and how the coach would, you know, feel about that. But I think, you know, it does help fans enjoy the game. And I don't know what benefit fans would get from watching a silent game, you know, from not hearing what actually just happened or finding out about, you know, an injury or why a guy is hurt or if he's coming back. You know, those are all things that I think would hurt the game. And so I'm not sure how it could be a positive.
Okay. Let me ask you about the 18 game schedule. It seems to be coming as a locomotive coming down the tracks, and it's going to be here whether you want it to or not. And Ryan Kelly was talking about his being against it, and he's a ranking member of the NFLPA. And my first thought is always, well, if you can't get your union, you can't get your union membership, the rank and file, to, if you're all not seeing the same thing, you're getting a majority that wants to play it, and there's a significant minority that doesn't, and you're not in line, you're arguing with each other. The only power you have is to be united against the NFL. If you want to limit the number of games, if you want to add a second bye week, if you want to add more money to it, but it seems like that kind of train wreck, because players have described a game getting up the next morning, getting feeling that day they've been in a train wreck. That's where this is headed, and the NFL players don't seem to realize they hold a good amount of power because games can't be played without them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the NFL players have figured this one out, and they know that they have some control. And what's interesting is that each side has something that they want. Players want improvement to the offseason. They want more time off, and they don't want to necessarily do more to earn the same money that they're earning right now. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's a natural reaction that, I think most of us would have. The owners want more money, you know, and they can only do that by playing more games. And so there's an advantage and a disadvantage to both sides, and they're trying to work. They're both trying to win this negotiation, if you will. It's going to happen. The 18th game is going to happen, and there's already been talk from some owners about they think it should go to 20, and that they think that'll happen shortly after 18. Now, with this change that is being talked about, I believe they'd add the 18th game and take away a preseason game. That's the first concession that the owners are offering, and that gets them, you know, more money that they can charge for the extra game, being real. But it's only if they get to 20 where they really start to make more money, you know, because there's not much left to give up then. And, you know, they're going to work it out, because at the end of the day, both sides are going to want more money out of this. And they're going to get that too. And I suspect that they'll go to 18-2, you know, one more regular season game, one less preseason game for 25. But, you know, I think the big negotiation is going to be when the owners try and push to 20. And, you know, we'll see what happens with that. And you know, it's all about when the player's here, yeah, you do have to take the risk of more injuries. You do have to play more games if you go past 18 with one less preseason game. But you're also going to get more money, too. And, you know, once it settles in with everybody and they think they have a plan, and there is one of the main reasons for this from the player's perspective is health and safety. And, you know, they have to figure out not only what changes they're going to make the game healthier and more safe, but can they convince the players that it's going to work? And when they do, then the players will have less objection to this. Because, you know, most players that I've worked with over the years and talked to, they like playing the game. You know, it's not that they don't want to play more games. They're trying to work out the financial side and the health side. That's the bigger issue this than whether or not they really want one more game.
Well, I think they should play every week because we need the content. So work on that, Hub, okay? You're the senior NFL analyst. You get that done by the next time we talk, okay?
I'll see what I can do. Steve, the one other issue with this that nobody's talked about is the timing of the year and the weather and the conditions, you know, and they're not really going to move that, and they can only go so far, because if you do go to one more or three more regular season games, they're going into January, you know, and those are all bad weather games, and there are disadvantages for teams in bad weather cities. So that's a piece of this, too, that they have to figure out is what the timing of it is going to be and how they're going to make it work, depending on how many more games they eventually add.
As long as the Super Bowl is played the day before President's Day, we will finally get the day after the Super Bowl as the national holiday we deserve. That is how long you make the season.
Well, fair to me. You know, I'm with you. I just think that, you know, we haven't talked much about it, but it is one of the issues that while it's not football, it does make this trickier for them to sort out.
Hub, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Be well.
Steve, take care.
All right. That's Hub Arkish, senior NFL analyst for The Score. Right here on The Score. And I have a broadcast announcement. Listen up, all y'all. A simple way to listen to Mullion Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkins and Spiegel, and everything The Score has to offer is with the free Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app today, search 670 The Score, and take us wherever you may go. One texter took us to what he called the sewer of St. Louis, and that's why he was waking and baking. That's exactly what the Odyssey app can do for you. The W Wake and Bake Clubber best friend.
Why was he in a sewer, though? Don't be in a sewer.
He's you can in St. Louis. Anywhere. He has no choice once you're in St. Louis.
Okay. Don't be in a sewer.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, the cultural zeitgeist. And I asked the question at the beginning of the show. I'll ask you again. Would you want an Ark of the Covenant from Raiders of the Lost Ark there for sale? I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with ShopPay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And I apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
OB to the SA. That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Ohms. Ohms.
Ohms. Ohms.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Indeed we have. Welcome in, Saturday Suckage, cultural zeitgeist. We are penetrating it. Remember when I told you about the Big Lebowski auction? Like, you could get the shawl that Jeff Lebowski wore. I don't know about the rug that really tied the room together, but you could get the shawl. Well, the same company, Julian Auctions, has another show this week. Bidding's going on now, but it's not final. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff, Forbidden Planet stuff, a lot of Irwin Allen stuff and all the terror. You can bid on it now. Like, what kind of stuff? How about an Ark of the Covenant from Raiders of the Lost Ark? It's a production used Ark of the Covenant from Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is 20 grand and going up. You got to have a room and bigger. Yeah, 20 grand, but you get to melt the face of Nazis. So that's a really good part of it too. Maybe this is something that would interest you. And one of the next two items will interest you, Robbie. A BMX bike made for Elliot and E.T.
Ooh, yeah.
It was made for production and used in promotions for Elliot to ride. $12,500 and going up, like over the moon. But there's not a basket. The thing is, there's not a basket where you'd carry your extraterrestrial. I don't know. That looks like a mistake to me.
Then how am I going to carry it?
Right. Maybe you'd be interested in this. A red Sith trooper helmet from the Rise of Skywalker. 10 grand now and rising like Skywalker. It goes from the 12th to the 14th. Now, here's something if you're really old like me, or if you like the Eagles like me, or you're used to the beginning of the show like me, up for bid are a pair of James Dean's owned and worn penny loafers. An estimate of hitting 10 grand. Glenn Frey had to explain to Don Henley who James Dean was. Rebel without a cause. Like, how do you not know? And anyways, he was a god in Texas, and that's why they wrote the song about him. 10 grand for a pair of loafers. A pair of penny loafers James Dean owned. They can be yours. Julian Auctions. Tell me what you win. Come back to the show. You can text us 312-644-6767.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
Coronation of Connor McDavid begins tonight. This tweet from the great Michael Farber. A generation ago, someone would have said,
Connor McDavid could stick handle in a phone booth, but now there aren't any phone booths. Robbie, do you know what a phone booth is?
Yeah, it's that thing that Superman comes out of.
Right. There you go. So Stanley Cup Finals begin tonight. Oilers, Panthers. This is the northernmost team in the NHL against the southernmost teams. Good luck flying. The best player, McDavid, against the best team. This is a deep Florida team. He got there last year, didn't win. McDavid's the best player in the league and getting better. The most experienced coach in the league against the least experienced coach in the league. And there's always a Hartford Whalers connection. There was a Hartford Whalers connection with Joel Quenneville. Coached the Hawks to 3 Stanley Cup championships. I mean, they were despicable at the time. We didn't know it. And they were protecting a sexual predator. And that continues to get sicker. Well, let's go on. It's not why you called. The Hartford connection in the Stanley Cup Finals this year is Florida coach Paul Maurice against Edmonton coach Chris Knobloch. Maurice is the last coach of the Hartford Whalers. Knobloch is the first coach this year of the minor league Hartford Wolfpack. And when Edmonton fired their coach, they called Knobloch. They signed him. Knobloch, by the way, played for the Austin Ice Bats about 20 years ago. I think you veteran Saturday Suckageers, you know where this is going. The Ice Bats logos, they're sort of cute. There's one with the word Austin scrawled inside the spread of a bat's wings. But it's nothing close to the Flying Chunklas de San Antonio. That flip-flop in the middle of a ball cap, that is the GOAT. And the flying flip-flop smacking the middle of a Dios de los Muertos skull, that is the best. T-shirt, ball cap, whatever you got. Last week I got a Twitter notification from a listener whose account is named Unironic Malort Enjoyer. It was accompanied by a picture of his new flying chunkless ball cap. He thanks Saturday Suckage, as one does, for the images of little grandma, the abuelita, throwing her flip-flop at her grandkids. A righteous team name, a righteous image. How right? I mean, look at this. I started this piece talking about ice hockey, and it always comes back to the flying chunkless. Omaha! Omaha! I had no idea who Gary Millerchip was, but the chief financial officer of Costco, an executive vice president newly named, confirmed what all hot dog lovers were wondering. They had to make a third quarter earnings call. Quote, to clear up some recent media speculation, I want to confirm the $1.50 hot dog price is safe. The $1.50 charge for Costco's hot dog and soda, that combo, is the same as it was in 1984. Mental Floss and USA Today did the legwork for us. They did the math. I didn't want to do it. That's why they exist. Accounting for inflation, the $1.50 combo thing should sell for $4.25. Quarter pound hot all beef tube, 20-ounce soda, it appears to be immune to the whims of food distributors and whatever. That's what it is at Costco. The guy, the president of Costco, told the guy in charge, don't you, for the love of God, don't change this price. They sell, I don't know, do you go to Costco, Robbie? Do you?
I used to, but living in the city, I don't have a car, so sadly I can't go. Unless
this
I
was me and Otter. This is how we knew we were taking a serious step in our relationship, when we got a Costco membership. That's how we did. Costco sells nearly 200 million hot dog and soda combinations.
Oh my God.
That's up from the previous year's sales of $156 million. The company sells more hot dogs than Major League Baseball. The chief of Costco says people would pay, they've done surveys on this site, people would pay $1.75, maybe more, right? He said $2. It's always round numbers. If you're in Vegas and you're begging for money, don't beg for $50 or $75. You know, make it $25 or make it $100. That's, if you're selling something in Vegas, there's a story in one of the great poker books. I think it was the biggest game in town. And it was in downtown Vegas back when it was really a seedier thing and people were selling paintings. And a guy said, because it's Vegas, if you charge $75, nobody's got any money. You charge $100, they'll whip out a C note and buy it and keep on and take the thing and keep on going. Anyways, Costco uses this as, they don't want the extra quarter. They just think it's goodwill and they believe it's paying off. And they've had Costco devotees suggest that friends go on first dates at a Costco food court. I'm going to let that hang. Did Robbie, do you know anybody? Did you ever go on a first date at to a Costco food court?
No, but that is the definition of a cheap date.
Yeah, $1.50. Only if you get the combo. I don't know whatever anything else is, but I know the combo is $1.50 and it will remain that way. The idea of going to a Costco food court.
Sitting at that little bench with the umbrella, which makes no sense because you're in like a factory. So why would you need the umbrella?
Yeah, you're in the warehouse.
Yeah.
So. And everything's inside. They want you inside. They want to see a, you can't get out unless you produce the right receipt. Wow. First date.
I'd debate it.
You know what you'd find out? Whether you had a keep or not. If that was your, if that was the shallow end of your pool, that was it. You would find out. We're going to go on a cut. You know what? I'm going to rearrange my sock drawer. I'm, or whatever it is. You would, wait, let's go to Costco.
I thought you were going to say if she put ketchup on it, then she's out.
Well, that's a whole nother thing. Are you against that?
Yeah, I am against that.
We had Bobby Pastrami on, my friend from Vienna Dogs. He runs
Bobby Pastrami.
Bobby Pastrami, yeah, from Vienna, Vienna Beef, and he's the one who started the Vienna Beef Hot Dog Hall of Fame. And me and Espo had him on last Labor Day, and we talked about grilling, and he's explaining the story, and he did such a great job of it that Trash Panda texted me and said, "All right, my fiance's listening to this, and now she needs Vienna swag. You know, help me out, yo." So he did. And he said in Comiskey, or the Raid, or whatever they're calling it, Whiskey Bottle Field, apparently, according to Paul DeJong yesterday, that in center field is a hot dog stand where they offer ketchup. And if you put it on, there's a bell. They ring a bell of shame if you put ketchup on.
Good, as they should.
I started this a couple months ago and pissed somebody off, so let's keep going. Time for the 20th greatest riff in rock and roll history. But that's, see, you just can't. You got to play air guitar, maybe air bass, whenever you want to do it. You got to. It's the Beatles. Number 20, Day Tripper on my list of greatest guitar riffs, greatest riffs in rock history. So that's the third. I guess that's a, I don't know if that's a good percentage or not, but it's the third Beatles riff on my list. Number 13 was Ticket to Ride, and number 12 was A Hard Day's Night. Yeah, see? There you go. That's the riff. Tell me that's not iconic. Tell me that's not legendary. That's what it is. Yeah, okay.
All right, take a break. When I come back, I will share with you. Wait a minute. 815 texter. It's not a first date, but my friend and his wife got engaged at Costco with a ring from their own jewelry department.
Is that a healthy marriage or does that end in a divorce?
I think it's healthy if they're both on that page. It's a healthy marriage. A first date to a Costco food court would establish who you are, what you are. You look transparency.
Exactly.
Right? That is a basis for a good relationship. That's what I've learned.
I would never see my girlfriend again. She would be insulted and leave forever if I proposed at a Costco.
But that didn't have to be for your motivation.
No, exactly. Right.
And where did the you and the University of Chicago, where did you and the Maroon, Miss Maroon, go?
For what?
For your first date.
Oh, we went to a bar.
And you think that's better than a Costco food court?
I guess you're right.
Maybe it is. But that established a foundation, a basis for your relationship. We're both here.
I wish now, I had a hot dog at that bar. I didn't eat anything.
See, if you had gone to the Costco food court, that may have established that kind of foundation. Maybe you didn't need that.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. We'll take a break when we come back. The best thing I saw this week from the best mustache in sports history. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
765 Texter, you are so boring. Does that mean I suck? Well, then 765 Texter, you understand the object of the exercise, and I apparently have achieved it. Welcome in, welcome back. Before I get out of here, I want to share this with you. Best thing I saw this week came from CalgaryFlames.com, written by Chris Wall. A story: when Senior Constable Jose Cives heard the over-dispatch that the man had collapsed in the Calgary International Airport, he had no idea the attending that call would change his life and that of a hockey legend. 15-year veteran of the Calgary Police Service sprung into action on that February day, knowing there was no time to spare. Quote, "As I arrived, I automatically took over from the male that was doing chest compressions. I took over chest compressions and continued from then on after." Sivas said this on a recent Friday. "I'm told that we worked on him for 10 minutes solid together with the use of an AED. The patient was none other than Lanny McDonald. Hockey legend, legendary mustache, the greatest mustache in sports. A hero in Hockey Canada, particularly Calgary." Sivas continued, "There were many times when I thought Lanny wasn't going to make it through, but I wasn't going to stop until I got some sort of result. By the time I had finished, he had come around. He was moving, talking. His eyes were open, looking around. And by that stage, EMS and Calgary Fire had arrived. I was somewhat exhausted, but I knew I'd done my bit, and I left the rest to the experts." So this is February, and he saves Lanny McDonald's life. Fast forward to a couple Fridays ago. McDonald, smiling, laughing through that iconic mustache, turned up with teammates from the 1985 championship team from Calgary. Colin Patterson, Tim Hunter, Rick Walmsley, showed up at a Calgary Police Association fundraiser along with a special guest, the Stanley Cup. They had been in town for a reunion of the 89 team that won the Stanley Cup, those Calgary Flames. McDonald took his teammates and the cup along to say thank you to this local hero who saved his life. Said McDonald, "To be able to bring the cup here when I was in town, and it was in town, and it just happened to be their fundraising event, they had no idea it was coming, to be able to surprise them, be here knowing they make such a difference in the community is so rewarding. What a great way to say thank you to Jose." I love that. I just love that. Guy saves his life. What can I do for you? Well, we're going to bring the cup down. Here you go. Get your picture taken with the cup.
Best mustache in sports, doing one of the best things, the best thing I saw this week. There's something else I want to get back to. When we were talking about the White Sox and the nadir of just what a, you know, now we got bottles being thrown. A little kid gets hit with a bottle last night, as described play-by-play, Paul DeJean to Chuck Garfine. We played that for you. And the worst team in baseball by a lot, still on pace to tie the 62 Mets for the worst winning percentage in baseball history. Congratulations. And this was after a win. They're still on pace for that. Julie Swiker texted me and said, Mark Burley was on a broadcast last night. I did not realize this. I missed that. And said he would have stayed in Chicago at a discount. And Jerry Reinsdorf said, no, we're good. Thanks. There is no more White Sox player, I mean, more lovable, I don't think, than Mark Burley. What are you doing, Robbie? You got it?
You had a wonderful run here in Chicago. What was it like when you could no longer play here in Chicago because you played a few other places?
Yeah, I mean, it was, obviously I would love to finish out my career here. But again, at that time, whenever I signed with Miami, we went into Jerry and said, hey, this is what Miami's offering. I don't have to have that much to come back here. I would love to finish out my career here. This is all I knew. So it did suck not being able to finish out my career with one team, but that's kind of what happens in baseball. And I was getting older and had a lot of innings, and they didn't want to – they had a bunch of young guys coming, so they're just kind of like, you know, good luck and wish we could make it happen, but it's not going to.
All right. Julie Zwicka, we love you. We're trying to get you that chef's phone number.
I found the guy's
name. Make the bear claw. Well, Julie needs it. But now
I'll give it
she
to you.
Again provided us with another voice on the roll call.
Thank you. Welcome, Mark Burley.
Welcome, Mark Burley, to the roll call if we ever get on the air. Mark Burley is no, I mean, he is the standard for fast games. Brandon McCarthy, a short time White Sox, and funny guy otherwise, and he was before they set the pitch clock, before they worked on all the speed up things, specifically about the pitch clock, McCarthy, a pitcher, was asked, what do you think about this? How fast should it be? And he said, I think we should just take Mark Burley's time and delivery and add 10 seconds. That's what he did. It's a great line. And it feels that way. Burley could throw a ball in 10 seconds. And what is it, 14, 18, whatever it is. That's what he did. That's what he pitched. He moved the game along. Hi, call it, throw it. There you go. I'm ready.
If I was a White Sox, that clip would have made me puke.
Say again?
If I was a White Sox fan, that clip would have made me puke.
Well, it did. Julie was quite angry. And sending that along, though, she wanted it noted that this is, of all the bad things this team can do to you, here's Mark Burley. Now, he was on the White Sox broadcast. So my discussion before, like if Steve Stone leaves, would anybody ask that question? I don't know. If Steve Stone leaves after this year when his contract is up, see, you can't go announcerless just so you can have Mark Burley say stuff about the team that sucks out there on the field and the ownership that sucks and the administration, the whole organization sucks. I don't know if Mark Burley will ever be allowed back, but he absolutely is that he was the best guy. We love dealing with him. He had a great sense of humor. He moved things along. So unpretentious. Not an issue. All right. That's it. Saturday Suckage. No one important, listen. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
765 texter, you are so boring. Does that mean I suck? Well, then 765 texter, you understand the object of the exercise, and I apparently have achieved it. Welcome in, welcome back. Before I get out of here, I want to share this with you. Best thing I saw this week came from CalgaryFlames.com, written by Chris Wall. A story: when Senior Constable Jose Cives heard the over-dispatch that the man had collapsed in the Calgary International Airport, he had no idea the attending that call would change his life and that of a hockey legend. 15-year veteran of the Calgary Police Service sprung into action on that February day, knowing there was no time to spare. Quote, "As I arrived, I automatically took over from the male that was doing chest compressions. I took over chest compressions and continued from then on after." Sivas said this on a recent Friday. "I'm told that we worked on him for 10 minutes solid together with the use of an AED. The patient was none other than Lanny McDonald, hockey legend, legendary mustache, the greatest mustache in sports, a hero in Hockey Canada, particularly Calgary. Sivas continued, "There were many times when I thought Lanny wasn't going to make it through, but I wasn't going to stop until I got some sort of result. By the time I had finished, he had come around. He was moving, talking. His eyes were open, looking around. And by that stage, EMS and Calgary Fire had arrived. I was somewhat exhausted, but I knew I'd done my bit, and I left the rest to the experts." So this is February, and he saves Lanny McDonald's life. Fast forward to a couple Fridays ago. McDonald, smiling, laughing through that iconic mustache, turned up with teammates from the 1985 championship team from Calgary, Colin Patterson, Tim Hunter, Rick Walmsley, showed up at a Calgary Police Association fundraiser along with a special guest, the Stanley Cup. They had been in town for a reunion of the 89 team that won the Stanley Cup, those Calgary Flames. McDonald took his teammates and the cup along to say thank you to this local hero who saved his life. Said McDonald, "To be able to bring the cup here when I was in town, and it was in town, and it just happened to be their fundraising event, they had no idea it was coming, to be able to surprise them, be here knowing they make such a difference in the community is so rewarding. What a great way to say thank you to Jose." I love that. I just love that. Guy saves his life. What can I do for you? Well, we're going to bring the cup down. Here you go. Get your picture taken with the cup. Best mustache in sports, doing one of the best things. The best thing I saw this week. There's something else I want to get back to. When we were talking about the White Sox and the nadir of just what a, you know, now we got bottles being thrown. A little kid gets hit with a bottle last night, as described play-by-play, Paul DeJean to Chuck Garfine. We played that for you. And the worst team in baseball by a lot, still on pace to tie the 62 Mets for the worst winning percentage in baseball history. Congratulations. And this was after a win. They're still on pace for that. Julie Swike texted me and said,
Mark Burley was on a broadcast last night. I did not realize this. I missed that. And said he would have stayed in Chicago at a discount. And Jerry Reinsdorf said, no, we're good. Thanks. There is no more White Sox player, I mean, more lovable, I don't think, than Mark Burley. What are you doing, Robbie? You got it?
You had a wonderful run here in Chicago. What was it like when you could no longer play here in Chicago because you played a few other places?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously I would love to finish out my career here. But again, at that time, whenever I signed with Miami, we went into Jerry and said, hey, this is what Miami's offering. I don't have to have that much to come back here. I would love to finish out my career here. This is all I knew. So it did suck not being able to finish out my career with one team, but that's kind of what happens in baseball. And I was getting older and had a lot of innings, and they had a bunch of young guys coming, so they're just kind of like, you know, good luck and wish we could make it happen, but it's not going to.
All right. Julie Zwicka, we love you. We're trying to get you that chef's phone number.
I found the guy's
name. Make the bear claw. Well, Julie needs it, but now
I'll give it
she
to you.
Again provided us with another voice on the roll call.
Thank you. Welcome, Mark Burley.
Welcome, Mark Burley, to the roll call if we ever get on the air. Mark Burley is no, I mean, he is the standard for fast games. Brandon McCarthy, a short time White Sox, and funny guy otherwise, and he was before they set the pitch clock, before they worked on all the speed up things, specifically about the pitch clock, McCarthy, a pitcher, was asked, what do you think about this? How fast should it be? And he said, I think we should just take Mark Burley's time and delivery and add 10 seconds. That's what he did. It's a great line, and it feels that way. Burley could throw a ball in 10 seconds. And what is it, 14, 18, whatever it is. That's what he did. That's what he pitched. He moved the game along. Hi, call it, throw it. There you go. I'm ready.
If I was a White Sox, that clip would have made me puke.
Say again?
If I was a White Sox fan, that clip would have made me puke.
Well, it did. Julie was quite angry. And sending that along, though, she wanted it noted that this is, of all the bad things this team can do to you, here's Mark Burley. Now, he was on the White Sox broadcast. So my discussion before, like if Steve Stone leaves, would anybody ask that question? I don't know. If Steve Stone leaves after this year when his contract is up, see, you can't go announcerless just so you can have Mark Burley say stuff about the team that sucks out there on the field and the ownership that sucks and the administration, the whole organization sucks. I don't know if Mark Burley will ever be allowed back, but he absolutely is that he was the best guy. We love dealing with him. He had a great sense of humor. He moved things along. So unpretentious. Not an issue. All right. That's it. Saturday Suckage. No one important listen. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.